Hi, this is Dave Kale, and today we're talking about entertaining your customers strategically. Here's a question I'm sometimes asked. It's this: how much time should I spend entertaining my customers? You know, that's a great question. The world of field sales is changing rapidly these days, and everything is in question. The practice of entertaining customers is one of those issues that needs to be rethought from time to time. Now's a good time. So first of all, you know, the first question is, should you entertain? Should you? And let's consider whether or not you should entertain your customers. In these days of e-commerce and internet communications and texting and emailing and voicemailing and all that, is there a place for entertaining your customers? And let me just share with you some of my experience. I had a high potential account that I could just, you know, I could just get nowhere in that account. Months went by, and I just couldn't make any progress. Now, my company owned six season tickets to the University of Michigan football games. And every now and then, I would get to use them. And it was, as it turned out, it was my turn to use six season tickets. So I invited the head of the purchasing department of that huge account and her spouse to join my wife and myself and one other customer and his or her spouse. And, you know, we spent the afternoon together and we enjoyed a typical tailgate meal and then a great college football game. It was a glorious day in Michigan, you know, 70 degrees, blue sky, 104,000 people. Just one of those, you know, great moments. And immediately after that, I mean, the very next week, I began to do business in that account. And business grew continually until it eventually became my largest account. That football game, spending, you know, a few hours with a customer outside of the office, that football game was the turning point in that relationship. And it wasn't that, you know, I gained any inside information. We didn't even talk about business. But my customer came to know me better, and in so doing, became more comfortable with me as a person. And, you know, that made all the difference. But that was not the first nor the last time for that experience. I used to do this during the summers. I would gather two customers and one manufacturer's rep and their spouses, so we had a party of eight. And I would do this once a month or so. I would take everybody to dinner at Greektown in Detroit and a Tiger game. And we just had two rules. Rule number one, no one talks business. Rule number two, I'll fund the evening. And, you know, these were always good times. And almost always immediately after, the business grew with those accounts. Now, it wasn't that, you know, we gained business information. It wasn't that we cut deals. It was none of that. What did happen every single time was that my customers came to know me better and they knew me differently. And we became more friends instead of just buyers and sellers. And, you know, that brings us to an incredibly powerful rule of business. People do business with people they know and trust. Let me repeat that because it's so common sense. People do business with people they know and trust. That important truth is illustrated by the examples I just gave you. People like to do business with people they know and people they trust. The better they know you, the more likely it is they will do business with you. And when they spend time with you outside of the business setting, they come to know you better. It really is that simple. Now, this doesn't mean that, you know, you take somebody to a ballgame, you can charge 20% more than your competitors. No, it does not mean that you can get away selling an inferior product or that your company can get away with second-class service. But when many of these things are viewed by your customer as about the same as what your competition offers, you're much more likely to get the business if you're the one who has the greater relationship with the customer. The relationship does not stand in place of quality and price and service, but it can provide you a competitive edge. You know, I have a phrase for this thing. I call it oiling the gears of the relationship. In my seminars, I like to compare the role of the relationship in selling to an oil can that's used to lubricate the gears. If you have some gears and they're moving, sooner or later you've got to oil the gears, or it's going to get hot and friction, and the thing's going to break down. So the oil is necessary whenever you have two things coming together in relationship. Oil is necessary to keep it all working well. It is possible to sell without good relationships with your customers. It's just much harder. Building powerful personal relationships with your customers, just like oiling the gears, just makes everything else move that much smoother and easier. In this time of high-tech communications, powerful personal relationships provide the high touch for which many people are subconsciously hungering. Robert Putman, in his landmark book called Bowling Alone, quoted a study from an MIT group, an MIT researcher. Here was his conclusions. Quote, though some unimportant business relationships and casual social relationships will be established and maintained on a purely virtual basis, physical proximity will be needed to cement and reinforce the more important professional and social encounters. Now, what that means is, if you're selling big-ticket business-to-business items, people want to know you. And later, more directly to our point, the research concludes widespread use of computer-mediated communication will actually require more frequent face-to-face encounters and extensive, deep, robust social infrastructure of relationships must exist so that those using the electronic media will truly understand what others are communicating to them. In other words, even in this high-tech world, characterized by voicemail and texting and email and social media and e-commerce, etc., face-to-face relationships, at least in the world of business-to-business commerce, are a competitive edge. So, is there then a place for entertaining your customers in this high-tech sales environment? Absolutely. The question becomes not whether or should you. The question should be, how should you do it in such a way as to gain the greatest benefit? And here's some thoughts, some tips on entertaining effectively, things that have worked for me. First of all, entertain strategically. Having lunch every Tuesday with your buddy who happens to work for one of your customers is not entertaining strategically. That's a waste of time. Instead, do this. Make a list of all the individuals who could be instrumental in buying your products and services. Rank them in order of importance. Like, how important are they to the sale? How much business do they really control? So rank them. Maybe 20, 25, 30 people in your area of influence who could control your standard of living. Then start at the top and methodically work down through the list. Try to spend some social time, not business time, with each. Now, my experience is evenings and Saturday afternoons work best. Sunday sports events, concerts, plays are all excellent because they're attractive, they appeal to a lot of people. And to sit at a 40-yard line of a University of Michigan football game, for example, is probably a once-in-a-lifetime experience for most people. Remember, the purpose is to get to know one another as people better, not to get to know each other as buyer and seller. So don't talk business unless your customer brings it up. And no sales pitches. When you do that, you know, you just harden the roles that each of you are to play. That's exactly the opposite of what you want to have happen. Instead, search for personal common ground, things that you have in common with your customer. You're trying to get to know each other as people, not as role players. So number one, strategically. Number two, always with spouses. I found it to be always more effective to invite the customer and his or her spouse or their boyfriend or girlfriend to join my wife and I. Having the other two people makes the customer feel more at ease, and it increases the likelihood that it'll be a pleasant social evening. Number three, be a responsible host. When you're entertaining, remember that you are the host and that you should attend to all the details. That means that you make the dinner reservations, you see about parking, you arrange transportation. If you're in a sporting event, you pay cash for the beer and the hot dogs and so on. Think of the evening through in detail and prepare for all the contingencies. Now, while a beer or two is okay, be careful with your use and provision of alcohol. Too much alcohol can leave a literal as well as figurative bad taste in your customer's mouth. Next, no extremes. No extremes. Finally, do not allow the evening to go to extremes in any way. Don't be the loudest fan. Don't be the last to leave. Don't order the most nor the least expensive meal on the menu. Be gracious and moderate in everything you do. Strategic entertaining can be one of your most powerful strategies. It's a way to build relationships which provide you with a competitive edge. And at the same time, meet the customer's preference for doing business with people that he or she knows and trusts. That's why you do it. It's one of those best practices that the best salespeople use all the time. Okay, that's it. Bye-bye.